Good morning and welcome to Mornings for the Master right here on the Gospel Radio Network. I want to welcome you to the Thursday edition. My name is Chris McElyea, your host. I'm glad you joined me today. Mornings for the Master is a program heard each weekday here on the Gospel Radio Network. And we are in our Thursday studies, beginning a new study today. Last week, we completed our look at the book of Philemon. And now, for a few weeks, we're going to go back to the Old Testament, and we are going to consider the Lamentations of Jeremiah. And so I hope you'll join us, if the Lord wills, through this study. The book of Lamentations means tears or a dirge. Lamentations is a song of mourning. In fact, the book of Lamentations is a symbolic funeral song for the daughter of Zion who had died. Now, both the internal and the external evidence supports the fact of Jeremiah as being the author. Now, the setting for this book and the times are recorded in the historical books of 2 Kings, there in chapters 22 through 25. And I would encourage you to go there and review that time period as we go into this study. Also, 2 Chronicles chapters 34 through 36 and Jeremiah chapter 52. Jeremiah preached during the reigns of Josiah and the last four kings of Judah. And sadly, all of the last four were bad kings. Now, among the prophets, the contemporaries of Jeremiah would include Nahum and Zephaniah and Habakkuk, Daniel and Ezekiel. In the last 40 years of the monarchy, Jeremiah stood as a pathetic and lonely figure, giving God's last message to his rebellious and idolatrous people. Southern Judah had finally reached the depths of moral and spiritual decay, just as the northern Israel had done earlier. In the latter part of Jeremiah's life, Nebuchadnezzar and the Babylonians destroyed Jerusalem and the temple, and they took people into captivity. There was no longer public worship. Not long after the destruction, the Jews who refused to submit to Babylon took Jeremiah to Egypt. Go with me to the book of Jeremiah, and there let's notice in chapter 43, verses 1 through 7. Now it happened, when Jeremiah had stopped speaking to all the people all the words of the Lord their God, for which the Lord their God had sent him to them all these words, that Azariah the son of Hoshea, Johanan the son of Kareah, and all the proud men spoke, saying to Jeremiah, "You speak falsely. The Lord our God has not sent you to say, 'Do not go to Egypt to dwell there.' But Baruch, the son of Neriah, has set you against us to deliver us into the hand of the Chaldeans, that they may put us to death or carry us away captive to Babylon. So Johanan, the son of Kareah, all the captains of the forces, and all the people would not obey the voice of the Lord to remain in the land of Judah. But Johanan, the son of Kareah, and all the captains of the forces took all the remnant of Judah who had returned to dwell in the land of Judah, from all nations where they had been driven, men, women, children, the king's daughters, and every person whom Nebuzaradan, the captain of the guard, had left with Gedaliah, the son of Ahikam, the son of Shaphan, and Jeremiah the prophet, and Baruch the son of Neriah. So they went to the land of Egypt, for they did not obey the voice of the Lord. And they went as far as Tahpanhes. David's 400-year earthly kingdom was finished. Christ, the gospel, and the spiritual kingdom were to come later. This was a low point in Jewish history. Now, as far as the time of this writing, it would have been after the destruction of Jerusalem and probably before the Egyptian trip. Now, notice a few verses here that would lend to that. Jeremiah chapter 39 and verse 2. In the 11th year of Zedekiah, in the fourth month, on the ninth day of the month, the city was penetrated. Chapter 41 and verse 1. Now it came to pass in the seventh month that Ishmael, the son of Nethaniah, the son of Elishama of the royal family, and of the officers of the king, came with 10 men to Gedaliah, the son of Ahikam, at Mizpah, and there they ate bread together in Mizpah. Also in chapter 41, verse 18, because of the Chaldeans, for they were afraid of them, because Ishmael, the son of Nethaniah, had murdered Gedaliah, the son of Ahikam, whom the king of Babylon had made governor in the land. And chapter 43 and verse 7. So they went to the land of Egypt, for they did not obey the voice of the Lord, and they went as far as Tahpanhes. So this would place the date in the neighborhood of about 580 to 585 BC. Now, as far as the purpose of the book, it is sorrow over the captivity of Judah and the desolation of Jerusalem and the temple. Now, Jeremiah, he identified with his people because of who, not what they were. And he wrote these funeral songs for his city. Indeed, the book of Lamentations is certainly a commentary on Proverbs chapter 14 and verse 34 that says, righteousness exalts a nation, but sin is a reproach to any people. That same principle, that righteousness exalts a nation, but sin is a reproach to any people, still, even today, governs the destiny of nations. Oh, how I wish our leaders would hear this today. Jeremiah, anticipates the fall and the Lamentations looks back on it. Consider the book of Jeremiah is a warning. It's looking ahead to the defeat and the desolation of Jerusalem. And after that, the book of Lamentations is a mourning that looks back to the defeat and desolation of Jerusalem. The book of Lamentations is divided into five laments, poems about the defeat, destruction, and desolation of Jerusalem. We could outline the book by the five chapters. Chapter 1 is poem 1. We see Jerusalem deserted. It is a 22-verse acrostic. Chapter 2 could be titled Jerusalem Destroyed. Our second poem also is a 22-verse acrostic. Chapter 3, or poem 3, would be Jeremiah's Distress, a 66-verse acrostic. Chapter 4, or poem 4, is Jeremiah Defeated, a 22-verse acrostic. And finally, Jerusalem's Desires, chapter 5, or poem 5. Chapter 5 is also 22 verses, but it is not an acrostic. Now, when we consider the book of Lamentations in relation to the rest of the Bible, there are significant contributions from this book. It is beautiful Hebrew poetry, largely in an acrostic form. And in this book, we find the full range of the suffering of the people of Judah. Now, an acrostic, what that means is that each verse begins with a letter of the Hebrew alphabet, and it's in sequence from first to last. Chapters 1, 2, and 4 each have 22 verses, one verse for each letter of the Hebrew alphabet. Chapter 3 has 3 verses for each letter, with thus 66 verses. And then finally, chapter 5 is not acrostic. But in this book, the Lamentations emphasizes the hopelessness of people who do not walk according to truth. In Ephesians chapter 2 and verse 12, it says that at that time you were without Christ, being aliens from the commonwealth of Israel and strangers from the covenants of promise, having no hope and without God in the world. We can also see Christ in the book of Lamentations. Jeremiah's weeping over the city because of the things that happened brings to us, certainly to our mind, the fact that it would be about 6 centuries later that the Messiah, Jesus Christ, would also weep over the city for what was about to happen. Remember Matthew chapter 28 and verses 37 and 38. O Jerusalem, Jerusalem, the one who kills the prophets and stones those who are sent to her. How often I wanted to gather your children together as a hen gathers her chicks under her wings, but you were not willing. See, Your house is left to you desolate. Also notice Luke chapter 19, verses 41 to 44. Now as he drew near, he saw the city and wept over it, saying, If you had known, even you, especially in this your day, the things that make for your peace. But now they are hidden from your eyes. For days will come upon you when your enemies will build an embankment around you, surround you, and close you in on every side, and level you, and your children within you to the ground. And they will not leave in you one stone upon another, because you did not know the time of your visitation. And certainly the Lamentations reminds us that Luke here reminds us that he, Jesus, like Jeremiah, would identify personally with human suffering caused by sin. And so, we can well describe Lamentations as Jerusalem's funeral. Sin can destroy any nation, the United States of America included. Sin and error also destroy churches and individuals. The Lamentations ends in darkness. We are in darkness until we turn to the only true light, as John chapter 8 and verse 12 tells us. And so now let's begin our study of the book of Lamentations in chapter 1. Go with me now to verse 1. How lonely sits the city that was full of people. How like a widow is she who was great among the nations. The princess among the provinces has become a slave. She weeps bitterly in the night. Her tears are on her cheeks. Among all her lovers, she has none to comfort her. All her friends have dealt treacherously with her. They have become her enemies. Judah has gone into captivity under affliction and hard servitude. She dwells among the nations. She finds no rest. All her persecutors overtake her in dire straits. The roads to Zion mourn, because no one comes to set feast. All her gates are desolate. Her priests sigh. Her virgins are afflicted, and she is in bitterness. Her adversaries have become the master. Her enemies prosper. For the Lord has afflicted her because of the multitude of her transgressions. Her children have gone into captivity before the enemy. And from the daughter of Zion, all her splendor has departed. Her princes have become like deer that find no pasture, that flee without strength before the pursuer. In the days of her affliction and roaming, Jerusalem remembers all her pleasant things that she had in the days of old, when her people fell into the hand of the enemy, with no one to help her. The adversaries saw her and mocked at her downfall. Jerusalem has sinned gravely. Therefore she has become vile. All who honored her despise her, because they have seen her nakedness. Yes, she sighs and turns away. Her uncleanness is in her skirts. She did not consider her destiny. Therefore, her collapse was awesome. She had no comforter. O Lord, behold my affliction, for the enemy is exalted. The adversary has spread his hand over all her pleasant things. For she has seen the nations enter her sanctuary, those whom you commanded not to enter your assembly. All her people sigh. They seek bread. They have given their valuables for food to restore life. See, O Lord, and consider, for I am scorned. Is it nothing to you, all you who pass by? Behold and see, if there is any sorrow like my sorrow, which has been brought on me, which the Lord has inflicted in the days of his fierce anger. From above he has sent fire into my bones, and it overpowered them. He has spread a net for my feet and turned me back. He has made me desolate and faint all the day. The yoke of my transgressions was bound. They were woven together by his hands and thrust upon my neck. He made my strength fail. The Lord delivered me into the hands of those whom I am not able to withstand. The Lord has trampled underfoot all my mighty men in my midst. He has called an assembly against me to crush my young men. The Lord trampled as in a winepress the virgin daughter of Judah. For these things I weep. My eye overflows with water, because the Comforter, who should restore my life, is far from me. My children are desolate, because the enemy prevailed. Zion spreads out her hands, but no one comforts her. The Lord has commanded concerning Jacob, that those around him become his adversaries. Jerusalem has become an unclean thing among them. The Lord is righteous, for I rebelled against his commandment. Hear now, all peoples, and behold my sorrow. My virgins and my young men have gone into captivity. I called for my lovers, but they deceived me. My priest and my elders breathed their last in the city, while they sought food to restore their life. See, O Lord, that I am in distress. My soul is troubled. My heart is overturned within me. For I have been very rebellious. Outside the sword bereaves. At home it is like death. They have heard that I sigh, but no one comforts me. All my enemies have heard of my trouble. They are glad that you have done it. Bring on the day you have announced, that they may become like me. Let all their wickedness come before you, and do to them as you have done to me. For all my transgressions, for my sighs are many, and my heart is faint. The Book of Lamentations is a funeral dirge. We read these five poems written about the author's grief and his pain over the destruction of Jerusalem and the destruction of God's temple. Yet these poems are not just the rambling of Jeremiah's pain. The structure of the poetry reveals a carefully thought response to grief. And Jeremiah takes us on his journey through grief and pain. And so now let's look into the first poem, Lamentations chapter 1, an acrostic where each verse begins with the successive letter of the Hebrew alphabet. Now as we study, remember, this first poem does not have all the answers, but it is the starting point for a godly handling of grief and pain. And so first off, we see a lack of comfort. The declaration that stands out in this poem is that there is no one to comfort. Notice verse 2. She weeps bitterly in the night. Her tears are on her cheeks. Among all her lovers, she has none to comfort her. All her friends have dealt treacherously with her. They have become her enemies. She has no one to comfort her, according to verse 2. Verse 9 says her uncleanness is in her skirts. She did not consider her destiny. Therefore, her collapse was awesome. She had no comforter. O Lord, behold my affliction, for the enemy is exalted. So verse 9 points out that Israel had no comforter. Verse 16, for these things I weep, my eye overflows with water, because the comforter who should restore my life is far from me. My children are desolate because the enemy prevailed. So verse 16 points out that Jeremiah's eyes were flowing with tears, for there was no comfort for him anywhere close. Verse 17, Zion spreads out her hands, but no one comforts her. The Lord has commanded concerning Jacob that those around him become his adversaries. Jerusalem has become an unclean thing among them. So verse 17 points out that Zion stretched out her hands, but there was no one to comfort her. Verse 21, they have heard that I sigh, but no one comforts me. All my enemies have heard of my trouble. They are glad that you have done it. Bring on the day you have announced, that they may become more like me. So verse 21 says that they heard my groaning, yet there is no one to comfort me. Now notice that in three of these instances, verses 2, 9, and 17, that Jeremiah is referring to the lack of comfort for the city of Jerusalem and its inhabitants. Also notice that in the other two instances that we just looked at, in verses 16 and 21, the author refers to himself. Notice how verses 16 and 21 switch to the first person, and his own lack of comforters in his grief. Now we might note too that tied closely to this is the word groaning that occurs 5 times here in poem 1. We see it in verse 4, verse 8, verse 11, verse 21, and verse 22. The city is groaning. The people are groaning, and the author is groaning. These words of groaning and lack of comfort ring out like a funeral bell gonging throughout the poem. Notice now verse 7 and the picture of utter helplessness. In the days of her affliction and roaming, Jerusalem remembers all her pleasant things that she had in the days of old, when her people fell into the hands of the enemy, with no one to help her. The adversary saw her and mocked at her downfall. The city of Jerusalem is shown in deep misery, so much so that all that is left to do is remember the former days of happiness. This is what disaster and despair will do to your life. Our grief and our pain can become so overwhelming that life begins to seem helpless and hopeless. One can reach a point where all that they feel that they can do is to remember the good old days, days of the past, for it seems to them there will be no more good days ahead. Look at verse 12. Is it nothing to you for all you who pass by? Behold and see, if there is any sorrow like my sorrow, which has been brought on me, which the Lord has inflicted in the day of his fierce anger. Verse 12 continues this thought, where the question is asked, is anyone sorrowed more than them? This is also what intense grief can do. The person begins to feel like no one has gone through what you are going through. No one is sorrowful like me. No one is sorrowful like us. It is a time when we look and see the joy of the wicked and wonder why we are in agony while trying to be righteous. There is no one to comfort. This is a fact about grief and pain. There is nothing another person can do. As much as we enjoy receiving the sympathy of others, when you get down to it, it is not really comfort. Yes, it is nice to know that you have friends and family. Yes, it is wonderful to know that people care. But there is nothing that a person can do. When we've got the diagnosis for Grace and her disability, there was nothing anyone could do. When you are going through pain and grief, there are no words that can help. There are no quick fixes. There is no comfort. Not only is there no comfort, but those who you thought were your friends and helpers can become your enemies according to verse 2. Jerusalem speaks of those who were supposed to be her allies and supporters. Yet, They have turned their backs on her. We put a false hope in people. People are going to let us down. They cannot be our comforters because they do not have the power to do so. They cannot help. They are just as helpless as you are. So we go through our pain and grief. Listen to the pain that the author describes for himself and for those who lived in Jerusalem. The physical grief that they are feeling is intense, and it is overwhelming. Look at verse 13. From above, he has sent fire into my bones, and it overpowered them. He has spread a net for my feet and turned me back. He has made me desolate and faint all the day. In verse 13, Jeremiah describes the pain as a fire in his bones. The intensity of his grief causes his body to ache all over. And furthermore, verse 13 says that he is stunned and faint. Verse 16 says, "For these things I weep. My eye overflows with water, because the Comforter, who should restore my life, is far from me. My children are desolate, because the enemy prevailed." In verse 16, Jeremiah declares that he is crying and that his eyes flow with tears. Have you been afflicted with pain so great that your eyes just overflow with tears? Sleepless nights filled with tears? Jeremiah's body hurts with the grief he is enduring. Look at verse 20. "See, O Lord, that I am in distress. My soul is troubled. My heart is overturned within me. For I have been very rebellious. Outside the sword bereaves. At home it is like death." In verse 20, Jeremiah says that because of his distress, his stomach churns and his heart is wrung within him. He feels like his insides have been twisted and turned over. Grief is certainly even physically painful. Grief hurts. But let's consider now a second thing today, and that is that there is truth in grief. As we study through these five poems and lamentations, we're looking for critical truths that are going to help to anchor our lives through grief and pain, for they certainly will come. Jeremiah expresses a truth that is his first anchor in his grief. And that is in verse 18, and the fact that the Lord is in the right. God is always in the right. Deuteronomy chapter 32 and verse 4 expresses this truth. "He is the rock, his work is perfect. For all his ways are justice, a God of truth and without injustice. Righteous and upright is he." Whatever is happening, we have no right to charge God with wrongdoing. This is the mistake that we seem to see Job commit that must be corrected. No one can charge God with wrong or making a mistake. This is when we are tempted to fail in our grief. We begin to think that God has done something wrong. But the Lord is always right, whatever happens to us. We are the ones who are not in the right, even though we are seeing the author exclaim in his pain, "How could God do this?" We also see him saying, "The Lord is in the right." I don't understand this, but there is one thing I do know. Our Lord is always right in all that he does. So hold on to truth, even through pain and grief. Now let's consider that we can find hope even in grief. We noted earlier that one of the difficulties with pain and grief is that there are no comforters. There is nothing another person can do. We feel helpless in our grief, and others will feel helpless in your grief. So what then are we to do? This does not mean that we are left helpless and hopeless. God describes himself as the one who gives comfort and relief. Think about how miserable the people are in their grief for all they had lost. Listen to the opening words of Isaiah's prophecy after depicting the fall of Jerusalem. Notice Isaiah chapter 40, verses 1 and 2. Comfort, yes, comfort my people, says your God. Speak comfort to Jerusalem and cry out to her that her warfare is ended, that her iniquity is pardoned, for she has received from the Lord's hand double for all her sins. God will comfort his people. The next words of Isaiah's prophecy is the call to prepare the way of the Lord. God is coming, and he is coming to comfort his people. Though there was no one to comfort Jerusalem for her sins and for her loss, God speaks tenderly to his people and brings them comfort. This is true for today also. Listen to what the Apostle Paul says to the Christians in Corinth. 2 Corinthians chapter 1, verses 3 to 5. Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of mercies and God of all comfort, who comforts us in all our tribulation, that we may be able to comfort those who are in any trouble with the comfort that which we ourselves are comforted by God. For as the sufferings of Christ abound in us, so our consolation also abounds through Christ. Our God is the Father of mercies. He is the God of all comfort. There may be comfort in this world, or rather no comfort in this world, but God is the one over all comfort. God is the giver of comfort. He comforts us in our pain and affliction, and we comfort others through that comfort. God gives the comfort we need. This is why prayer is the first place to turn in our grief and pain. When Jesus is in anguish, moments before he is about to be betrayed, what is Jesus doing? Praying. Prayer to God is the first step forward. Prayer is the only way forward, for God is the only one who can comfort. The Bible teaches us to pour out our complaint, our sorrow, and our anguish to the God in whose presence we not only live, but grieve. And notice, This is exactly what Jeremiah did in his grief. Chapter 1, verse 9 says, "But, O Lord, behold my affliction." Verse 11, "See, O Lord, and consider, for I am scorned." And verse 20, "See, O Lord, for I am in distress." This is all we need to know for turning to God. You may not know what to say. You may not know what to ask for. You may not know what help you need, but you can turn to the Lord in prayer, and you can say, "Look, look, my pain. Look at what has happened to me. Yes, our God is the God of all comfort, and all that our God does is right." Let us pray for comfort in time of distress. For those are the first steps for a godly response to pain and grief in our lives. And that is to look to God who gives mercy and comfort. I want to thank you for joining me today. Remember, this program will be replayed this evening at 9 p.m. Central Standard Time, and it'll be posted to the on-demand section of the Gospel Radio Network website in a day or so. Be sure to tune in tomorrow with Brother Chip Horton for the Friday edition of Mornings for the Master. And if the Lord wills, we will look at the second of these poems of lamentations, these funeral dirges, for we find poem number 2 as chapter 2. I look forward to it, and I hope that you will also and be here with us at that time. So until we meet again, this is Chris saying so long and have a great day.